And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez. And Brian, we're in the new studio.
But yeah. Yeah, it is a little cramped in here.
Sure.
But
it's cozy.
Do the job. We've got a full, 4 inches between us and the television here.
Okay, so, but lots of stuff going on, too.
Yes,
so
lots of stuff.
Jump right into it.
Let's do that. So if you use Git within Visual Studio 2012, there is an RTM version of that add-in available. We've talked about this a few times. If you're already using Visual Studio 2013, then this is built into the product. But if you downloaded the add-in for Git, I guess that came out almost a year ago now, then you'll want to make sure that you go ahead and grab this RTM version that'll update within the...
And high level, in case people don't know, Git is a distributed source control.
Git's distributed source control. We've added it to both Team Foundation Server,
right.
Team Foundation Service in the cloud, and to the Visual Studio Client for 2012 and 2013. And with this add-in, you can actually connect to any Git repository, whether that's TFS, GitHub, Bitbucket, local, et cetera.
Great. So I'm using the client tools and connecting up to GitHub.
Sure.
Using this download.
Yep.
For example. Or CodePlex.
Or TFS, or whatever.
Awesome.
Yep.
Very cool.
Exactly.
So next one is we sim-shipped Visual Studio 2013 content in 14 languages. That's VS 2013, 14 languages. So are you ready?
Yep.
It's going to be Brazilian, English number one.
Yes.
Brazilian Portuguese.
See?
Chinese simplified. Chinese traditional. It'd be awesome if you knew yes in every one of these. That would be fantastic. Czech, German, French, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Polish, Russian, Spanish, and Turkish.
Yes. Yes.
So huge amount when you think about the amount of volume of documentation. So very cool, and kudos to the developer content localization team. I know there's a lot of folks. We have an international audience, and sometimes it can really help having those documents localized to your local language.
Absolutely. So congrats to the team. That's awesome.
Yeah.
This next story is about bringing TouchDevelop to the cloud. So what that means is that if you use TouchDevelop to write applications, they've released this new add-in, I guess is what they call it, called Cloud Data for TouchDevelop.
Right.
Makes it super easy to work with storing the state of variables within your application.
Mm-hmm.
And the common scenario here that they talk about is if you're writing a game and you maybe are writing a tic-tac-toe game or a chess game, right, and you want to be able to have, you know, me make my move, persist that to the cloud, you get an email notification saying
great
you can log
turn-based
in and make your
games.
Move. Great for turn-based games, exactly, but I'm sure you can write think of all sorts of application scenarios where this would be helpful. So now they make it super easy to do that.
Very cool. Very cool. So Corona Labs announces an SDK, and the big thing is folks are probably familiar with Corona Labs that have done some game development, and specifically 2D game development,
mm-hmm.
right? So sort of like your Asteroids, or maybe your 2D space shooter.
Mario Brothers.
That genre of games, they're game engines that's specifically tied to 2D, and that's Corona Labs is one of the leaders there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and folks have been able to build for iOS and Android. Now they've launched support for both Windows Phone and Windows Store apps.
That's huge. That's
so,
awesome.
So, officially getting support. So, if you are a developer using Corona today, this is a great way to take assets you have and actually target both Windows Store and Windows Phone 8.
That's sweet. I can't wait to see some of those games.
Awesome.
So if you are a Windows RT developer and you're writing Windows Store applications and you want to target Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, this is a great tool that makes it easy for you to discover which APIs have been deprecated from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. So,
sure.
Of course, deprecation means the API is still available, but
we're marking it as
obsolete. Right, so you want to think about your migration plans moving forward because it may not exist in 8.2 or 9 or whatever the next version happens to be.
Cool, and I love that somebody's gone through the process of actually diffing the two to see what's changed.
Yeah, definitely. So nice job. This next one is hardcore debugging for .NET developers. Now, this is not for the faint of heart. This is hardcore. I mean, first word
so
in the title.
So not just breakpoint and debug that write line?
Exactly. Or just, 40 monkeys on a typewriter like I like to approach. Just, keep banging away until it works. But this is if you want to use WinDBG, this is an extension from Rodney Viana. He's a Microsoft employee, and previously this was an internal tool available only to Microsoft. But he's released it and gotten permission to release this as a personal project. Basically, what it does is lets you query against your WinDBG dumps as if it was a database. And so he's got a nice little syntax for saying, show me all the objects that are on the heap and that sort of thing, and making queries to see exactly what's out there. So
this what's going on with some weird memory corruption that you don't know what's going
absolutely,
on with?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you're really debugging one of those pesky issues, this looks like it would be helpful. I probably will, never be smart enough to understand how to use this tool, but I'm sure lots of people out there will be.
Very cool. So this is actually a tutorial on using Windows Azure Backup Vault. Mm-hmm. So we talked about Windows Azure at Backup as a new way to be able to back up content. So this actually walks through how you can build a backup vault and how to, for example, use the agent, the backup agent, mm-hmm. to actually do things like, for example, schedule a certain time for doing backups of things like your storage files.
Okay.
Right? So if you have a bunch of data, you want to make sure that it's persisted. It's not so much that maybe Azure would fail, but what happens if there's a human failure, somebody, you know, deletes all data from a database or deletes all, you know, accidentally does some weird cascade delete. This is a great way to be able to have a backup. And for folks who are looking to learn how to get started, use the tutorials.
And so this is a backup from on-prem to the cloud or from the cloud to the cloud?
It's cloud to cloud, right? So it's basically a backup service.
Got it.
Lets you know, like, hey, this is sort of my live production environment, but I want to be able to back up data from that production environment in case whatever happens, I have that backup.
Excellent. Sounds good. Time for the picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
This is my pick of the week. I don't know if you've checked out archive.org for a while, Dan. They've got a lot of really great stuff on there. It used to be just web archives.
Yeah.
Recently, I was taking a look at some of the video archives that they've had. They have some interesting one of the 1962 World's Fair down at the Space Needle.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really hilarious. They go through and like take a look at what the future is going to bring to using the telephone.
We were promised jetpacks.
I have mine. I don't know where yours is at. But now they've actually added software collection to this. So you remember that game E.T. for Atari that was one of the most difficult games? You can actually go play that in your browser. They've got
and a lot of these are browser-based, too.
Yeah, a lot of them are browser-based or downloads that you can go take a look at. And so really, really cool because, a lot of these games, they're so hard to chase down. But it's nice to know that these are going to be preserved so you can go back and show your kids and future generations and they can wonder why you wasted your time playing all these, 8-bit games.
Wow, these games were terrible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
So my story in my pick of the week is the speaking checklist for great talks.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott Berkun is a well-known speaker, author. Met him at one of those O'Reilly events. Great guy. Has sort of the step-by-step thinking before the event, doing things like timing, how go through your actual content. Think about recording it so you see what kind of gestures you're doing while you're talking. Are you ending your sentences really quietly?
Mm-hmm.
And those things that you wouldn't necessarily pick up on, hey, I said all the talking points, but how was I actually intoning that content? Doing things like showing up early, making sure that you actually know where the place is. Checking things like, do you have all the cables? If you're using something that has batteries, are things charged, and so on. It really is a great checklist for, those of us that, if you ever have to present, it's the one thing to kind of look at because, you're so busy, you probably haven't had a lot of sleep.
Yep.
Going through a checklist is a great way to remind yourself of, I do need to make sure I have the HDMI converter for my DVI output.
I do love the idea of a checklist. This would have been helpful last week when I was in Poland. I literally got halfway through my demo. I was about to switch to another virtual machine that I forgot to boot in the cloud. So I literally had to apologize to the audience, log into the Azure portal, boot up the virtual machine, and then 3 minutes later. So checklist is awesome. Also, customize this checklist too, because there's probably things that you do that are special to the types of presentations that you deliver that maybe
changing
the rest
of us don't.
Changing
Visual Studio fonts,
absolutely.
Those kind of things.
Yeah, so I love this. I'm going to print it out, take it with me everywhere.
Cool.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Thanks.